Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're beginning in Genesis 45 and 46 today. It's becoming more and more obvious that Joseph's dream wasn't just a childish braggadociousness, but that God was involved. We see something now in the last few chapters, particularly 42 through 44, as Joseph kind of tested his brothers, apparently seeing if their attitude had changed. In connection, would they sacrifice Benjamin as they'd sacrificed Joseph earlier for their own gains? And apparently after this period of testing, Joseph was overcome with emotions about his brothers, the love for them. And so chapters 45 and 46 kind of show how Joseph revealed himself and brought Jacob down into Egypt. Of course, fulfilling Genesis 15, particularly 13 through 16, that God had told Abraham they would go to Egypt and be enslaved there. And yet again, throughout this chapter, all the way through the Exodus accounts, it's the mercy and grace of God, not the human provision of men, be it Joseph or Jacob, that God renews His covenant with every generation. God protects His covenant. God is going to bring it to pass because it's God's will. Now, He's using human instrumentality, but it's the grace of God for the entire human race that we're talking about. Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him, Egyptian service. And he cried, "Have everyone go out from me." So there was no man with him when Joseph made known himself to his brothers. Now we learned a brief parallel from this, from the sermon by Stephen just before he was killed in Acts 7:13. Now, whether he sent the Egyptians out because it was an intimate time and he wanted to be alone with his brothers, or he was afraid to embarrass his brothers about what they had done earlier in front of the Egyptians, we're real not sure. It must have been unusual for all the Egyptian servants to leave. And apparently they were right outside the door. Maybe that's why how they heard Joseph crying in just a minute. "And he wept so loudly, the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard of it." Now, notice your Bible. The "of it" and the "it" are in italics, means they're not in the Hebrew text. Either the servants were right outside the door listening in case Joseph summoned them and overheard what he said, and then they apparently passed it on to Pharaoh. I don't think they were just listening to be listening, but if Joseph said come, they wanted to be ready to come. So apparently they were listening outside the door. We know from many accounts, even modern accounts, that Oriental people, particularly the Near East, show their emotions very openly at times of funeral and joy. And Joseph has that very Hebrew characteristic here. "So Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph.'" Now, there's been some contention that he spoke in Hebrew, and that was a way for them to be certain it was really Joseph. I'm not sure. There's no translators here now. I'm not sure his other brothers spoke Egyptian, so it seems pretty obvious probably he did speak in Hebrew here. "Is my father still alive?" That's caused some concern, because back in chapter 43:27, in this period of kind of trials of his brother, he had asked about his father, and they said he's well. He'd ask about Benjamin. They said he's well. Some assert that the word "is he alive," that the word "alive" means much more than just "does he physically breathe," but "is he prosperous? Is he healthy? Is he doing well? Is the circumstances of his life pleasant?" And that may be the thrust of it here. "But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence." Dismayed, nothing. They were scared to death. Here's the guy they chunked in a cistern, crying all the time, "Please don't do this, my brothers." Sold him into slaves with him begging them not to. Well, don't you know, here he stands before them as the second in command of all of Egypt, that they're a little dumbfounded, a little nervous at this point. "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Please come closer to me.' And they came closer, and he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt.'" Oh, he put his finger on the problem. He put his finger on their timidity. Put his finger on their fear. Notice what he said. "And do not be grieved or angry, burn with yourselves, because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life." Oh my, this is a perspective of faith amidst circumstances. Oh, to God that we could have that kind of faith that didn't look to circumstances primarily, but look to the fact that God is really involved in our life for good. Now, I realize Joseph is using some hindsight here, And I realize that most of us can clearly see the hand of God in our past. But we all need to develop a perspective of faith that does not tie God's hands by negative circumstance. The Bible is replete with examples how God has even possibly engineered circumstances for the growth, development, and ultimate good for his child and glory for himself in negative circumstances. This is probably the classical example in the Old Testament, but there are so many. This reminds me beautifully of Romans 8, 28 and 29. God causes all things to work together for good to those who know God, to those who are called according to His purpose. Then verse 29 really translates it for us where it says, the good is not good circumstances always. I really think the plague of our day theologically is this health, wealth, prosperity mentality that says if God loves me, He'll give me a bunch. God loved Joseph, but He had a plan for Joseph's life. God loved Jesus, but He had a plan for Jesus' life. Now, this same beautiful theme is carried down through verse 9. We see it beautifully in 7, 8, and 9 again. God did this. God's the author of these circumstances. God's going to do His work through this. Don't be afraid. Boy, wonderful. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God knew the famine would come. He used it in the life of Joseph, and it was apparently known hundreds of years before in the time of Abraham. There's 5 more years of drought. It's going to be so bad, not only will the plow not produce crops, but the grassland's going to die, and someone like Jacob with large amounts of herds is going to lose most of their herd. So it really was severe. Jacob had to move. Jacob had to do something. Now, and God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant. Now, there's been a lot of discussion here about how did Joseph know about a remnant and how can he use that major theological term. And this is a major theological term in later Hebrew, particularly with the exile and all. But here, I think Jacob is speaking of himself, not of the nation of Israel. He's saying, I'm the remnant. God preserved me to preserve you. So I don't think it's used in its full theological sense that it later will be. And to keep alive by great deliverance. Now, this word deliverance is interesting. I think it shows that Joseph saw that God's hand was involved in his personal life for the greater good of the people of God. Again, it is God taking control of history for the protection and preservation of the covenant people by which He would bring the entire world to Himself, to the Messiah. Now, notice in verse 8, now therefore, it is not you who sent me here, but God. Oh, my. And He has made me. Now, 3 things were said here. A father to Pharaoh. We've learned from archaeological evidence that this was a title for the vicers of Egypt going back to the 3rd millennium B.C. So it's a very historical title for the second in command, the minister of state for the Egyptian kingdoms. And then secondly, Lord of all His house. Now we learn particularly from chapter 41, verse 40, and chapter 47, verse 20 through 26, that Joseph took care of the affairs of Pharaoh's personal lands. Matter of fact, all the farmers are going to sell their land to Pharaoh in this drought. Joseph will handle that. And thirdly, ruler over all the land of Egypt. You might want to see chapter 41, 41. He's going to distribute food for all of Egypt. So he's a special advisor to Pharaoh. He's over Pharaoh's personal property, and he's administratively over the land of Egypt. 3 different things. Now, hurry and go to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of Egypt. Come down and no delay. Don't you know these boys were worried about facing their dad, having to tell him the whole story of what they did? It's going to come out now. Sin always runs its course. Let it be no friend. Nothing's done in a dark corner. It's going to have to tell now. Oh, my. Oh, croak. Verse 10. And you shall live in the land of Goshen. Now, that's interesting because Pharaoh's going to mention that same land earlier. Some say, well, Joseph's using predictive prophecy here. Well, I don't think so. We learn from the next chapter that shepherds were not really a very popular occupation in Egypt. And I want to talk about that in just a second. But the thing is, Goshen was the pasture land of the nation. It's in the Nile Delta, kind of close to Canaan. It's on the eastern side of the Nile. It's later going to be called the land of Ramses. where Pithom and Ramses, the two cities that the Hebrews built, among others, are going to be located. So I think it's the obvious choice for herdsmen people. And I think that's why Joseph knew that. Now, and you shall be near me. This is interesting, near me. Many of us assume that it would be very hard for a Hebrew to rise to such a high level in a native Egyptian ministration, although archaeologically we have found some Semitic names in these native indigenous in Egyptian dynasties. Many have postulated that this may be the Hyksos rulers of Egypt, who were Semitic people. They were known as the shepherd kings. Now, some say that's why later the shepherds didn't like, the Egyptians didn't like shepherds, but that kind of messes up the chronology. It's possible this is the Hyksos rule, and they ruled Egypt from, let's see the dates here, 1720 to 1580. The reason I say that, their capital, known as Zoar in the Old Testament, Psalm 78, 12 and 43, but later came to be called Tanis. Now, Tanis is located in the Nile region. The native Egyptian dynasty's capital was at Thebes, which is several hundred miles to the south. And so we're wondering if not this "I'll be near you" is another evidence that the Pharaoh was also Semitic, and possibly this Hyksos rule. We can't be dogmatic of that because the chronology of this period is somewhat in dispute, depending on the Pharaoh of the Exodus and other things. Now, let's see. You and your children and your children's children, your flocks, your herds, and all you have. What he was saying, move the covenant people to Egypt. Move everything you have. Leave the land of promise and come here. It was a hard decision to make, I guarantee you. There I will provide for you, and there are still 5 years of famine to come, lest your whole household and all you have be impoverished. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of your brother Benjamin see, and it is my mouth that is speaking to you. Now, what is this about? Well, I think this is an affirmation that he's really speaking the truth. He's saying, look, you can trust me. This my mouth is speaking it. It almost becomes a Hebrew idiom for authority. It says Pharaoh's mouth spoke it. Therefore, it's true. Joseph said, I'm saying this to you. I mean what I say. I can take care of you. I will take care of you. Come. That's the idea here. Now, why my brother sees it and you see it. Of course, Benjamin was the other brother of Rachel. This is the first mention of Benjamin in this chapter. It means Rachel named him son of my sorrow because, you know, she died in labor. But Jacob changed his name, Genesis 35:18, to the son of my right hand, which is a very similar sounding name, but not so negative as the son of my sorrow. Now you must tell your father of all the splendor in Egypt and all that you have seen, and you must hurry and bring my father down here. Is Joseph bragging here? No, he's saying, you tell Dad that I've got the resources to help him. You tell him to come. Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Now, I got so tickled. I often read the rabbis in this, and Rashi, which is a Middle Ages kind of Jewish commentator, says, Benjamin wept because of the destruction of the temple, which located in his tribal area. And Joseph wept because of the destruction of the tabernacle at Shiloh, which was in his tribal area. So they're weeping over the destruction of the temple. Oh, baloney. They're weeping because they found each other. Remember, it's the obvious meaning of the text, which is the one we think's inspired, not some built-in meaning having all kinds of hidden allegories and spiritualizing. Be careful of allegory and be careful of the rabbis in some of these areas, I guarantee you. So now, at verse 16, the news got to Pharaoh's house, and Pharaoh sure wanted to keep Joseph there, and so he said, bring your family down. We'll be good to him. We want you to stay, not go home. You stay here with us. And so Pharaoh mentions the land of Goshen again, as Joseph had done earlier, and that's obvious because they're shepherds. And Joseph kind of is going to inform his family how to talk to Pharaoh later on, what to say to make sure you get that land. Now, in verse 21, the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons. Now, these are not chariots. But wagons were unique to Egypt. If you look at the map, you see that Egypt is all a delta. And wagons, of course, developed in this flat country much quicker than they developed in the hill country, but not as helpful. That's why the Philistines had iron chariots on the coastal plains of Palestine before the Hebrews who live in the hill country ever had those kind of things. And so they sent these wagons. They were unknown in Palestine, we think, and it must have been a real fancy parade that went down there to get Jacob. Sent these two-wheel carts, apparently pulled by oxen, according to the command of Pharaoh, according to Pharaoh's mouth, and gave them provisions for the journey. And each of them he gave change of raiment. Now, there's two possibilities here. This is ornamental clothing, festival clothing. It was either so they would be properly attired for their new Egyptian lifestyle, or that they would be seen to see somebody of the wealthy class in Egypt, or is just a means of another way of money in that day, was food, clothes, and then precious metals by weight. But to Benjamin, he gave 300 pieces of silver and 500. Well, Benjamin's the full brother. You think Joseph would learn that favoritism doesn't pay off real well. But again, he shows extra to Benjamin, and he's going to warn them about fighting on the way home, which I think may have been they were jealous about Benjamin got too much, or worried about it's your responsibility that he's sold here. You the one that really had the idea, and he didn't want them fighting over that. And to his father he sent as follows, 10 donkeys loaded with the best things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread and sustenance for his father's own journey. Now that's basically wealth to show his daddy he could survive, protect him and provide for him and food for the journey. So he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, do not quarrel on the journey. This is the word for burn back in verse 5. Maybe, like I said, about Benjamin getting more, he got more than I do, it's unfair, or you're the one that really wanted to sell him. I remember you're the one that, you're the one that did. He said, don't do that. God's involved with this. God did it. Y'all don't fight about that. And apparently they didn't, and they probably would have. And he told them, saying, Joseph is alive, and indeed he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. But Jacob was stunned. Now the word here means his heart grew numb or cold. It shocked him. I mean, he was really shocked, and he did not believe them. And when they told him all the words of Joseph, and apparently confessed their sin, that he had spoken to them, and when they saw, Jacob saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of his father Jacob revived. Now, right here we have the two names, Jacob and Israel, right together. Now, Jacob is the idea that maybe some say he'd been using Jacob because since Joseph died, he had just no zest for life. But his spirit's going to revive. He's going to move the whole covenant people. And so they call his name Israel. Now, that was the name he got from wrestling with the angel at the brook Jabbok before he met Esau, his brother, earlier in Genesis. There's been a lot of speculation about what the name means, and we're uncertain as far as its original etymology. Because of Genesis 32, 28, and 29, most of us think, let El persist. And that's what Brown, Driver, and Briggs have. But others say, like Young's Concordance, ruling with El. And still another possibility is, may El preserve. So we're not real sure what Israel means, but it's obvious a name that was given Jacob because of his new relationship with God. And in chapter 46. So Israel, here's the covenant man taking the covenant tribe, set out with all that he had and came to Beersheba. Now, Beersheba is an interesting place. It's one of the most southern cities in the Promised Land. You've often heard the expression from Dan to Beersheba, which is an idiom for the entire Promised Land. Now, Beersheba, it goes by two different names in the Bible. The etymology of the term is explained two different ways. You might want to see Genesis 21, 22 through 31, and Genesis 26, 33, for the two different possible names for this town. Now, this had great patriarchal meaning. Matter of fact, Abraham was at this spot, Genesis 27:33. This was one of the home places of Isaac, Genesis 26:25. So a very important ancient patriarchal site. And he offered sacrifices to God of his father Isaac. Now, you say, well, why did he put it that way? Well, first of all, usually you offer sacrifices after God appears to you. But here he does it because I think he wants God to speak to him. Now, it says the God of your father Isaac. That's not saying he's not the God of Jacob. It's a way of showing it's the covenant God. It's the patriarchal God. It's the family God. It's the one who made promises years ago and has kept the faith. And that's the idea here. And God spoke to Israel in a vision of the night. This is the last vision to the patriarchs. And said, Jacob, Jacob. Now, Rashi says this doubling of the name shows affection. And that may be true, but I'm not sure we can back that up from Hebrew usage. And he said, here am I, very common way of answering. And he said, I am the God. Now, this is, I am the El, the Elohim of your father. Now, it's obvious these two names are connected, but exactly how, we're not sure. Most think the word El has the idea of strength or power. I am the God, the definite article. I am, in implication, the only God for you. of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. Now, why would he be afraid? Well, I'm sure if the family tradition had kept the quote of Genesis 15, 13 through 16 about that the nation would be taken in slavery and God would have to deliver. Maybe he's worried about that special revelation to Abraham earlier, many years earlier. Some say Isaac had been commanded not to leave the promised land to go to Egypt. And now Jacob was doing that. He was leaving the land that God had promised to Abraham and Isaac, and he's worried about that. And so God said, it's okay. And here's how it's going to be okay. I'm going to go with you. My presence is going to be with you. Nothing of God limited to a certain area. I'm going to be with you down there, Jacob, and I'm going to work it out, and I'm going to protect you, and I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to deliver you just like I promised. Well, that was enough for Jacob. He said, okay, all right, we'll do that. And something's added here to the promises. I will make you a great nation there. We find the idea they're going to become a large people while in Egypt. Now, some have wondered about this. How did Egypt provide a conducive atmosphere for growth? Well, remember this. They're going to be in the land of Goshen. And from Genesis 46:34, we see that shepherds were anathema, abomination to the Egyptians. They were isolated because of their occupation. They were isolated because of their geographical setting, and so they didn't become amalgamated into Egyptian culture, but developed their own culture in a very fertile place. And that's what we're going to see here. And I will go down with you to Egypt. Wow. And I will also surely bring you up again. There's that wonderful promise. And Joseph will close your eyes. Now, this is a idiom we find quite often. We find it in chapter 50, verse 1, where Joseph really did that. The oldest son closed the father's eyes in death. It was a way of showing, I'm going to provide for you, I'm going to bury you appropriately. The only two people in the Bible we ever know were really embalmed is going to be Jacob, because he's connected with Joseph, and Joseph too, before the Exodus takes both their bodies back to the promised land. So that was a comforting for the old man to know that Joseph would be with him. And they took their livestock and property which they had acquired in the land of Canaan and came to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, and his sons and daughters with him, his daughters and his granddaughters. Now it says his daughters. Does that mean he had more than one daughter? We know her name, Diana. Well, this may be the daughters-in-law. That seems to fit the text better. And all his descendants, he brought them to Egypt. Now, we learn if you compare Genesis 47:9 with this, that Jacob was 130 years old when he came. Now, verses 8 and down through 27 is a list of how many people came. It's kind of a genealogy. Now, there is some problems here. When you add it up, the number's a little off. There's several different ways to make them come out right. Archer, in his book on Bible difficulty, does a good job. F.F. Bruce on the Bible questions does a good job. We're not exactly sure which one, but it's obvious that maybe the boys, Joseph and his two sons, are not counted because they're already in Egypt. Maybe Jacob himself's not counted. Maybe Diana's not counted. We're just not sure. Maybe the two boys who died aren't counted. The Septuagint has the number 75, which really will include Joseph's grandsons. Now, if you compare this list with other places, and there's two other places where these lists of the people went down to Egypt are given, Numbers 26 and 1 Chronicles 4 through 6. There's a little discrepancy in the spelling of some of the names, and some of these men may have gone by two names, but I think that the names are close enough that we see the historicity of the account. But they're not forced in the unanimity, which shows that it's an eyewitness account on genuine records, I think. Now, in verse 10, I got tickled where it says, Shaul, the son of the Canaanite woman. Rashi says that this is a child of Diana by Shechem. Remember that account back in earlier in Genesis where the people of Shechem took Diana and raped her and then wanted to marry her? Well, Rashi says this is the child, but I'm not sure we can breathe that in here. Then in verse 13, I have IOB in my Bible. Real possibility is the word for Job, and maybe even a reference to the patriarch. But he's not Hebrew, so I doubt that. It's just a possibility it is spelled the same way as Job. Notice in verse 15 it says they numbered 33, and that's one set of wives. Another set of wives, verse 18, numbered 16. Verse 22, and there were 14 persons in all. Verse 25, there were 70 persons in all. And you can see in the notes how I've made that those numbers work out. And look in the margins, like a New American Standard Bible shows you all the variations of the names through here, if you're interested in that. Now, let's see. By the way, this word persons can mean clans. There's some real ambiguity in some Hebrew words about how many people came out of the Exodus, because the word hundred can mean the word clan. And sometimes the word son can mean grandsons, great-grandsons, relatives. It's real hard to lock this down as tight as we'd like to in a Western chronology. Let's see. Okay. And all the persons, I'm in verse 26, belonging to Jacob who came to Egypt, his direct descendants, not including the wives of Jacob's sons, were 66 persons in all. And look at verse 27. There were 70. So you got 66 in verse 26. Then you add Jacob and Joseph and his two boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, and that comes out 70. Now, he sent Judah before him to Joseph. There's some difference here in the Septuagint. The Revised Standard Version follows the Septuagint, so if you want to see what they think. Some say he sent Judah to Joseph to get instructions. Others say he sent Judah to Goshen to show him the right way to go. I'm not sure which it is, and there's some confusion in the text. Notice down verse 34, if I could. And then you say, your servants have been keepers of flocks from your youth, even till now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. Now, Joseph instructed them how to talk to Pharaoh. Tell him you're shepherds, so you had to have an occupation. That's obvious from the Egyptian records. Since shepherding was not a very popular thing, the Pharaoh may have tried to change their occupation. So Joseph says, tell him you're shepherds, you've always been shepherds. It's structured in such a way that Joseph said, don't tell him you've got to be shepherds, but put it in a way that he'll say, okay, we'll keep the family tradition going and go to this particular fertile place, the land of Goshen. That was Joseph's plan, and he showed him exactly how to work with Pharaoh. He had done enough to know how to get through the court. He knew the political bureaucracy and knew how to work through it. Now, this Egyptians are loathsome. That's mentioned by Josephus in his Antiquities of the Jews, chapter 7, verse 5. You might want to look that up. Exactly why, we're not sure. Many relate to the Hyksos, but we can't be certain of that. But God's been involved, every part of this, getting His people where they ought to be. Well, I've really enjoyed being with you, and I hope to see you again, same time, same place next week. God bless you.